Section 1.4, First Consulship and First Triumvirate. The election was dirty. There were three candidates, Caesar, Lucius Lucius, and Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus, who had been aedile with Caesar several years earlier. Caesar canvassed Cicero for support, and made an alliance with the wealthy Lucius, but the establishment threw its financial weight behind the conservative Bibulus, and even Cato, with his reputation for incorruptibility, is said to have resorted to bribery in his favor. Caesar and Bibulus were elected as consuls for 59 BC. Caesar was already in Crassus' political debt, but he also made overtures to Pompey, who was unsuccessfully fighting the Senate for ratification of his eastern settlements and farmland for his veterans. Pompey and Crassus had been at odds since they were consuls together in 70 BC, and Caesar knew if he allied himself with one, he would lose the support of the other, so he endeavored to reconcile them. Between the three of them, they had enough money and political influence to control public business. This informal alliance, known as the First Triumvirate, the rule of three men, was cemented by the marriage of Pompey to Caesar's daughter, Julia. Caesar also married again, this time Calpurnia, daughter of Lucius Calpurnius Piso Caesoninus, who was elected to the consulship for the following year. Caesar proposed a law for the redistribution of public lands to the poor, a proposal supported by Pompey by force of arms if need be, and by Crassus, making the triumvirate public. Pompey filled the city with soldiers, and the triumvirate's opponents were intimidated. Bibulus attempted to declare the omens unfavorable and thus void the new law, but was driven from the forum by Caesar's armed supporters. His lictors had their fasces broken. Two tribunes accompanying him were wounded, and Bibulus himself had a bucket of excrement thrown over him. In fear of his life, he retired to his house for the rest of the year, issuing occasional proclamations of bad omens. These attempts to obstruct Caesar's legislation proved ineffective. Roman satirists ever after referred to the year as the consulship of Julius and Caesar. When Caesar and Bibulus were first elected, the aristocracy tried to limit Caesar's future power by allotting the woods and pastures of Italy, rather than governorship of a province, as their proconsular duties after their year of office was over. With the help of Piso and Pompey, Caesar later had this overturned, and was instead appointed to govern Cisalpine Gaul, northern Italy, and Illyricum, the western Balkans, with Transalpine Gaul, southern France, later added, giving him command of four legions. His term of office, and thus his immunity from prosecution, was set at 5 years, rather than the usual one. When his consulship ended, Caesar narrowly avoided prosecution for the irregularities of his year in office, and quickly left for his province. Section 1.5, Gallic Wars. Caesar was then appointed to a 5-year term as proconsular governor of Transalpine Gaul, current southern France, and Illyria, the coast of Dalmatia. Not content with an idle governorship, Caesar started the Gallic Wars, 58 BC to 49 BC, in which he conquered all of Gaul, the rest of current France, with most of Switzerland and Belgium, and parts of Germany, effectively western mainland Europe, from the Atlantic to the Rhine, and annexed them to Rome. Among his legates were his cousins Lucius Julius Caesar and Mark Antony, Titus Labienus and Quintus Tullius Cicero, the younger brother of Caesar's future political opponent, Marcus Tullius Cicero. Caesar defeated the Helvetii in Switzerland in 58 BC, the Belgic Confederacy and the Nervii in 57 BC, and the Veneti in 56 BC. On the 26th of August, 55 and 54 BC, he made two expeditions to Britain, and in 52 BC, he defeated a union of Gauls led by Vercingetorix at the Battle of Alesia. He recorded his own accounts of these campaigns in Commentari de Bello Gallico, Commentaries on the Gallic War. According to Plutarch and the writings of scholar Brendan Woods, the whole campaign resulted in 800 conquered cities, 300 subdued tribes, 1 million men sold to slavery, and another 3 million dead in battlefields. Ancient historians notoriously exaggerated the numbers of this kind, but Caesar's conquest of Gaul was certainly one of the greatest military invasions since the campaigns of Alexander the Great. The victory was also far more lasting than those of Alexander's. Gaul never regained its Celtic identity, never attempted another nationalist rebellion, and remained loyal to Rome until the fall of the Western Empire in 476 AD. Section 1.6. Fall of the First Triumvirate. Despite his successes and the benefits to Rome, Caesar remained unpopular among his peers, especially the conservative faction, who suspected him of wanting to be king. In 55 BC, his partners Pompey and Crassus were elected consuls and honored their agreement with Caesar by prolonging his proconsulship for another 5 years. This was the last act of the First Triumvirate. In 54 BC, Caesar's daughter Julia died in childbirth, leaving both Pompey and Caesar heartbroken. Crassus was killed in 53 BC during his campaign in Parthia. Without Crassus or Julia, Pompey drifted towards the Optimates. Still in Gaul, Caesar tried to secure Pompey's support by offering him one of his nieces in marriage, but Pompey refused. Instead, Pompey married Cornelia Metella, the daughter of Metellus Scipio, one of Caesar's greatest enemies. Section 1.7. Civil War. In 50 BC, the Senate, led by Pompey, ordered Caesar to return to Rome and disband his army because his term as proconsul had finished. Moreover, the Senate forbade Caesar to stand for a second consulship in absentia. Caesar thought he would be prosecuted and politically marginalized if he entered Rome without the immunity enjoyed by a consul, or without the power of his army. Pompey accused Caesar of insubordination and treason. On the 10th of January, 49 BC, Caesar crossed the Rubicon, the frontier boundary of Italy, with only one legion and ignited civil war. Upon crossing the Rubicon, Caesar is reported to have said, "Iacta alea est." This is normally rendered as, "The die is cast." The Optimates, including Metellus Scipio and Cato the Younger, fled to the south, having little confidence in the newly raised troops, especially since so many cities in northern Italy had voluntarily capitulated. An attempted stand by a consulate legion in Sumarium resulted in the consul being handed over by the defenders, and the legion surrendering without a significant fight. Despite outnumbering Caesar greatly, since he had only his 13th legion with him, Pompey had no intention to fight. Caesar pursued Pompey to Brindisium, hoping to capture Pompey before the trapped Senate and their legions could escape. Pompey managed to elude him, sailing out of the harbor before Caesar could break the barricades. Lacking a naval force, since Pompey had already scoured the coasts of all ships for evacuation of his forces, Caesar decided to head for Hispania, saying, "I set forth to fight an army without a leader, so as later to fight a leader without an army." Leaving Marcus Aemilius Lepidus as prefect of Rome, and the rest of Italy under Mark Antony as tribune, Caesar made an astonishing 27-day route march to Hispania, rejoining two of his Gallic legions, where he defeated Pompey's lieutenants. He then returned east to challenge Pompey in Greece, where on the 10th of July, 48 BC, at Dyrrachium, Caesar barely avoided a catastrophic defeat when the line of fortification was broken. He decisively defeated Pompey, despite Pompey's numerical advantage, nearly twice the number of infantry and considerably more cavalry, at Pharsalus, in an exceedingly short engagement in 48 BC. In Rome, Caesar was appointed dictator, with Mark Antony as his master of the horse. Caesar resigned his dictatorate after 11 days and was elected to a second term as consul with Publius Servilius Vatia as his colleague. He pursued Pompey to Alexandria, where Pompey was murdered by a former Roman officer serving in the court of King Ptolemy XIII. Caesar then became involved with the Alexandrine civil war between Ptolemy and his sister, wife, and co-regent queen, the pharaoh Cleopatra VII. Perhaps as a result of Ptolemy's role in Pompey's murder, Caesar sided with Cleopatra. He is reported to have wept at the sight of Pompey's head, which was offered to him by Ptolemy's chamberlain Pothinus as a gift. In any event, Caesar defeated the Ptolemaic forces and installed Cleopatra as ruler, with whom he is suspected to have fathered a son, Ptolemy the 15th Caesar, better known as Caesarion. Cleopatra moved into an elaborate estate belonging to Caesar, just outside Rome, across the Tiber. Caesar and Cleopatra never married. They could not do so under Roman law. The institution of marriage was only recognized between two Roman citizens. Cleopatra was queen of Egypt. In Roman eyes, this did not constitute adultery, and Caesar is believed to have continued his relationship with Cleopatra throughout his last marriage, which lasted 14 years and produced no children. After spending the first months of 47 BC in Egypt, Caesar went to the Middle East, where he annihilated King Pharnaces II of Pontus in the Battle of Zala. His victory was so swift and complete that he commemorated it with the words, "Veni, vidi, vici," I came, I saw, I conquered, and mocked Pompey's previous victories over such poor enemies. Thence, he proceeded to Africa to deal with the remnants of Pompey's senatorial supporters. He quickly gained a significant victory at Thapsus in 46 BC over the forces of Metellus Scipio, who died in the battle, and Cato the Younger, who committed suicide. Nevertheless, Pompey's sons Gnaeus Pompeius and Sextus Pompeius, together with Titus Labienus, Caesar's former pro praetorian legate, legatus pro praetore, and second-in-command in the Gallic War, escaped to Hispania. Caesar gave chase and defended the last remnants of opposition in the Munda in March 45 BC. During this time, Caesar was elected to his third and fourth terms as consul in 46 BC with Marcus Aemilius Lepidus, and 45 BC without a colleague. Section 1.8. Aftermath of the Civil War. Caesar returned to Italy in September 45 BC. As one of his first tasks, he filed his will, naming his grandnephew Gaius Octavius, Octavian, as the heir to everything, including his title. Caesar also wrote that if Octavian died before Caesar did, Marcus Junius Brutus would be the next heir in succession. The Senate had already begun bestowing honors on Caesar in absentia. Even though Caesar had not proscribed his enemies, instead pardoning nearly every one of them, there seemed to be little open resistance to him. Great games and celebrations were held on April 21st to honor Caesar's great victory. Along with the games, Caesar was honored with the right to wear triumphal clothing, including a purple robe, reminiscent of the kings of Rome, and laurel crown on all public occasions. A large estate was being built at Rome's expense, and on state property, for Caesar's exclusive use. The title of dictator became a legal title that he could use in his name for the rest of his life. An ivory statue in his likeness was to be carried at all public religious processions. Images of Caesar show his hair combed forward in an attempt to conceal his baldness. Another statue of Caesar was placed in the Temple of Quirinus with the inscription, "To the Invincible God." Since Quirinus was the deified likeness of the city and its founder and first king Romulus, this act identified Caesar on equal terms with not only the gods, but also the ancient kings. A third statue was erected on the Capitol alongside those of the 7 Roman kings and of Lucius Junius Brutus, the man who originally led the revolt to expel the kings. In yet more scandalous behavior, Caesar had coins minted bearing his likeness. This was the first time in Roman history that a living Roman was featured on a coin. When Caesar returned to Rome in October of 45 BC, he gave up his fourth consulship, which he held without colleague, and placed Quintus Fabius Maximus and Gaius Trebonius as suffect consuls in his stead. This irritated the Senate because he completely disregarded the republican system of election and performed these actions at his own whim. He celebrated a fifth triumph, this time to honor his victory in Hispania. The Senate continued to encourage more honors. A temple to Libertas was to be built in his honor, and he was granted the title Liberator. They elected him consul for life, and allowed him to hold any office he wanted, including those generally reserved for plebeians. Rome also seemed willing to grant Caesar the unprecedented right to be the only Roman to own imperium. In this, Caesar alone would be immune from legal prosecution, and would technically have the supreme command of the legions. More honors continued, including the right to appoint half of all magistrates, which were supposed to be elected positions. He also appointed magistrates to all provincial duties, a process previously done by lot or through approval of the Senate. The month of his birth, Quintilius, was renamed Julius, hence the English July, in his honor, and his birthday, July 12th, was recognized as a national holiday. Even a tribe of the People's Assembly was to be named for him. A temple and priesthood, the Flamen Maior, was established and dedicated in honor of his family. Caesar, however, did have a reform agenda, and took on various social ills. He passed a law that prohibited citizens between the ages of 20 and 40 from leaving Italy for more than 3 years, unless on military assignment. Theoretically, this would help preserve the continued operation of local farms and businesses, and prevent corruption abroad. If a member of the social elite did harm, or killed a member of the lower class, then all the wealth of the perpetrator was to be confiscated. Caesar demonstrated that he still had the best interest of the state at heart, even if he believed that he was the only person capable of running it. A general cancellation of 1/4 of all debt also greatly relieved the public, and helped endear him even further to the common population. Caesar tightly regulated the purchase of state-subsidized grain, and forbade those who could afford privately supplied grain from purchasing from the grain dole. He made plans for the distribution of land to his veterans, and for the establishment of veteran colonies throughout the Roman world. In 63 BC, Caesar had been elected Pontifex Maximus, and one of his roles as such was settling the calendar. A complete overhaul of the old Roman calendar proved to be one of his most long-lasting and influential reforms. In 46 BC, Caesar established a 365-day year, with a leap year every fourth year. This Julian calendar was subsequently modified by Pope Gregory XIII in 1582 into the modern Gregorian calendar. As a result of this reform, a certain Roman year, mostly equivalent to 46 BC in the modern calendar, was made 445 days long to bring the calendar into line with the seasons. Additionally, great public works were undertaken. Rome was a city of great urban sprawl and unimpressive brick architecture, and desperately needed renewal. A new rostra of marble was built, along with courthouses and marketplaces. A public library under the great scholar Marcus Terentius Varro was also under construction. The Senate House, the Curia Ostilia, which had been recently repaired, was abandoned for a new marble project to be called the Curia Julia. The Forum of Caesar, with its Temple of Venus Genetrix, was built. The city Pomerium, sacred boundary, was extended, allowing for additional growth. All of the pomp, circumstance, and public taxpayers' money being spent incensed certain members of the Roman Senate. One of these was Caesar's closest friend, Marcus Junius Brutus.